I think you're sleepy. Come back in an hour.
Need sleepy.
Please go away. Let me sleep for the love of God.
It's now time for the Billy C. Morning Show, part of the Billy C. Boxing Network. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
And we're coming to you live from the Billy C. Studios in Lake George, New York. I'm Bill Caligione. It's time for the Billy C. Morning Show. Good morning, everybody. Glad to be with you this morning, and we're glad to have you with us this morning. Special shout out to all of our viewers on Fight TV. And don't forget, you can watch this show and several others on your handheld. Just go to www.fight.tv. That's FITE.TV/Billy C. Download the app today for free. If you use if you go to fight.tv/Billy C, you get it for free forever. Watch this show on your handheld. You could be driving to work. You could be sitting on the toilet. I don't care where you're watching. You can watch it. So don't forget about the Fight TV app. Today's show is being brought to us in part by Sal's Neighborhood Pizzeria, an Italian restaurant located in St. Simon's Island, located on St. Simon's Island in Georgia. Check out the website, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com. Or give my man a call, 912-268-2328, 912-268-2328. Today's show is also being brought to us in part by my book, Tom Molino from Bonus, The Baddest Man on the Planet, is available right now where all good books are sold. You can get yourself a copy literally right now while you're listening or watching the show by going to barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com. Find out why we got a 5-star rating across the board. Trust me, you won't regret getting yourself a copy of this book. Today's Friday, and we're going to open up the phone lines a little bit later. But first, you know, a couple of topics are on my mind today. And one is PED use, performance-enhancing drug use, not only in boxing, but in all sports. And I'm sad to say that I think, I'm not as proficient in the actual PED, what's available out there and the different testing organizations. I mean, I tried to distance myself from it because it's so deep. You really got to educate yourself in order to talk about it. But so I'm going to talk about it in a large way, just an outsider looking in. And what I see is that, you know, the fans of sports, all sports, you know, be is it football, baseball, basketball, and of course boxing, are softening up to PED use. And I'll give an example why I'm saying this. Recently, the Major League Baseball has announced their inductees for this year. And the three major inductees, the living guys, Timmy Raines, an outfielder, Jeff Bagwell, first baseman, and Ivan Rodriguez, a catcher. At least Bagwell and Rodriguez, had always been connected to PED use, and they got in. Now, they weren't, this wasn't the first year on the ballot, but big names of stars in the 80s and early 90s, like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, those names are all associated with performance-enhancing drug use. And an interesting fact that I came across yesterday in the Wall Street Journal is that specifically Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, who seem to head the discussion of performance-enhancing drug use, last year, because they've been up for nomination to the Baseball Hall of Fame, last year, and in order to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame, you got to have 75% of the votes to get you in. And you're on the ballot for 10 years, and then that's it, right? Well, last year, 45.2% of the 75% votes needed to get Roger Clemens in and 44.3% to get Barry Bonds in. That was last year. This year, 54.1% approved Clemens and 53.8% approved Barry Bonds. Now, with the addition of Rodriguez and Bagwell in the Hall of Fame, and again, both were connected to PED use, it seems if the rise in percentage continues on its course now, that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens will both be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. My question today is, are PED use starting to get kicked under the carpet? Are we starting to accept it? I don't know. Joining me right now, my main man, Sal Rocky Senacola. What do you think, man? Are we leaning towards performance-enhancing drug use?
Well, you know, Bill, good morning. I'm very adamant against it, and I've always made my stance. I just don't think it should be in sports. I think what you could do naturally and what you could do with nutrition and things like that, why not? But, you know, for the performance-enhancing drug use, it's a short-term possible advantage. What I mean by that is because sometimes you're going to have to pay for it later in your life. But, you know, I think whenever you alter what the body's supposed to do naturally, it's doing something internally that it's going to rear its ugly head one day, possibly. But the whole thing is this, too. You know, we would joke and say, hey, well, they should either start a drug league or a natural league, whatever. It's just pathetic. But I think that you're right. I think the benchmark keeps getting lower and lower. And maybe the people that are looking to turn to these enhancement performing drugs or so are softening the blow. But, you know, you look at all the people across the board. You never in the history of sports that I believe, when you would look at baseball players, football players, torn muscles, this happening, that happening. Yes, it's always occurred, but it's happening more and more and more. And a lot of times, what happens is people that are using these drugs, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not this and that, but I just common sense. I think it'll help your muscle tissue become stronger than your insertion joint tissue, your ligaments, your tendons. So, you know, it's a disproportionate explosion of force and energy that's putting on your body. So you're seeing more stress fractures, you're seeing more muscle pulls, tendon pulls, everything else that's you know, hurting these athletes and keeping them on the sidelines a little more than usual. And I hope I'm not out of line for saying that, but I think that might be one of the side effects.
Well, you know, it's like this. And historically, in professional sports specifically, you know, every player wants an edge of some kind.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
a cup of coffee.
Well, you know, you get the better equipment. Maybe you invest some money in a better shoe or a better bat in baseball, or maybe you find a nutritional edge. Or a workout procedure edge. I mean, you know, traditionally, everybody wants an edge. And I think PED use started out as that. Now, unfortunately, like you mentioned, you know, we see that there's long-term effects and what have you. Plus, in boxing, you know, it becomes a danger effect. You know, you're not taking a steroid in baseball. You take a steroid to hit the ball out of the park. You know, in boxing, you're taking a steroid to knock your opponent's head off, you know. So, I mean, it's a little more serious. But with today's technology, the powers that be just can't keep up with the steroids. These are designer drugs, in a sense. Because once a steroid is defined and a name is given to it or whatever, and then the powers that be find out about it and they put it on the banned substance list, those guys are in the labs creating another one that's not on the list. That just you follow that whole procedure about finding it, discovering it, naming it, and putting it on the list. You know, so I mean, it seems to me that it's going to be a never-ending and losing battle. And I think that the fact that, you know, you're starting to see professional athletes get inducted into their halls of fame, field of play. That, you know, we're connected with it. To me, it's it's not just a theory. I think it's a percentage. And Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens specifically, those two guys, were always associated with steroid use. And, you know, they're both going to, most people believe that they're both going to get in the Hall of Fame, you know. And I don't know. But anyway, we'd be curious to hear your thoughts. We're going to open up the phone lines here in, I don't know, about 20 minutes or so. So if you have any thoughts on that, get ready. But don't be calling in until we open up the phone line. Another thing I wanted to talk about real quick, that Sal, was this. Badeau Jack, official, vacated his WBC super middleweight title because he's moving up to light heavyweight.
Wrong move.
Exactly. You know, and you know, my question today is that a good move or a bad move? First and foremost, I 100% I feel it's a bad move for him. Now, I don't know if this guy is doing this because they already have a deal in place. Maybe he's going after Andre Ward, who you know, is appearing to punk out of a rematch with Kovalev, because that's the kind of pussy Andre Ward is. I don't know if there's any big deals in place, maybe him against Adonis Stevenson or whatever. So putting that aside, based on his performance, number one, I think the sport of boxing should have been treated to a rematch between Jack and James DeGale. I mean, the fight ended in a draw. It wasn't like one side won. Secondly, I don't think that he's making a smart move chin-wise. I think he's susceptible to being stopped. He's been stopped before, and I think he's moving up into a division that is, you know, gonna garner some heavier hitters, you know. And I think he's making a mistake. Me personally, I think he's making a mistake. What do you think?
Well, I'll concur with you, and maybe I'll eat crow later. But I'll tell you what, I don't see the logic or the reason with his camp. Right now he could be sitting on a great mega payday for a rematch with DeGaulle, and clearly define who it could be a champion and unify that between the belts there. But I think right now, that's where they should be concentrating, and that should be part of the management team, part of the promotional team, part of this and that, to bring that together. But it's not going to happen because he's moving up to light heavyweight division. I think it's a bad move. I think he does get hit easily. Not too easy, but I mean, what he will be finding out is these punches that DeGaulle caught him with and hurt him or put him down with are going to be a little heavier when they come from a legitimate light heavyweight guy who maybe walks around at 200 pounds and comes down to weight and then lands some solid blows. I don't see his success. I don't see his reasoning. So, you know, I don't think it's a good move. But like I said, I hope I eat crow.
Yeah, no, I don't
see the reason. The natural layup. I mean, if you're playing a board a chess game and you're using your pawns and everything else on it to win, well, what's a good move for it? Well, maybe I should have a rematch with DeGaulle and call for big money because it was a great fight, and we'll do it and we'll get a big purse and we'll give the fans what they want. Or B, let me go up to the light heavyweight division where I could try and go against some real big names and heavy names and get my ass kicked. So, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's to me, it's blatant. We don't give a shit about the fan because, you know, now financially, maybe there's already, like I said, maybe there's already a deal in place and they feel that it's a smart financial move to make the move up, and it's all about the cash, you know. And, you know, you can't criticize somebody for that. But
no.
But from a standpoint of boxing, this guy could be in a position to dominate the super middleweight division. Similar to Triple G, you know, he's staying in the middleweight division. He wants to dominate it before he moves up. He's clearly in that position to dominate the middleweight division now with Triple G. Well, Badu Jack could do the same thing in the super middleweight division. Once you dominate, you know, in the past, that's what fighters did. You know, they would dominate a division. Once they feel there's nothing left in that division, they would move up. You know, as long as their body can handle it. What seems to be happening in today's sport of boxing is they get a fight, they collect a belt, which, you know, is like getting candy on Halloween these days, and then they immediately move up. You know, nobody's dominating a division anymore.
No.
And he certainly didn't. You know, you can't say that he dominated the super middleweight division. I don't know. But anyway, you know, you mentioned bigger paydays and stuff. You know, they're really serious. Apparently, Duco Events is getting closer and closer to signing Manny Pacquiao against Jeff Horn to take place in Australia. The latest report has Manny Pacquiao making as much as $150 million U.S. To fight Horn in Australia. And I know you and I both were talking about, you know, what's he doing that for? He should be fighting Manny Pacquiao, blah, blah, blah.
Hey,
well, now I guess things have now things
you know
have changed.
What he's doing it for? He's doing it for $150 million.
Exactly. Now things have kind of changed
Floyd,
a little
Floyd
bit.
Who?
Yeah. Now some things have changed a little bit. If Manny Pacquiao can go to Australia and fight Jeff Horn and you know, make 150 big ones, then hey, you know, more power
hey, you
to
know
him.
What?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you really can't complain too much about that. Yeah. Some good news. We got some good news. You ready to hear some good news? Because you know
I want to hear some good news.
Boxing is returning to ESPN. ESPN.
Are you
2.
Kidding me?
Yeah. Apparently, ah. Yep. Apparently, Golden Boy has signed a deal with ESPN and ESPN 2 and ESPN Deportes, and they will be doing. It's actually a multi-year deal, a series of fights. The first one begins in March. Apparently, they cut a deal for 18 fight cards beginning in March. They got one in March, April, a couple in May, a couple in June, a couple in July and August and September and October and November and December. So congratulations to Golden
that
Boy.
That is fantastic.
I'm glad. You know, I was concerned, to be honest with you, Sal, about the fights leaving ESPN. I thought that ESPN... should have kept the fights, and I'm glad to hear them that they're back.
It's a natural. ESPN and boxing is a natural. I made my two pro debuts on ESPN.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. Pro debuts on ESPN? Come on, man.
Oh, yeah, the first one was a no contest when I got butted by Gary Gamble, busted open 63 stitches.
That was your pro debut?
That was my pro debut against Gary Gamble at the Sands Casino. I believe it was September-October of 1982. And I was on the undercard of Alexis Arguello. And it was my pro debut. I was winning the fight. And in the third round, Gary Gamble put his arm around my neck and pulled me in and put his head down like a ram. Busted open my forehead. And I... received 63 stitches to close it. Now, at first, they called the fight in favor of Gary Gamble. But then Bob Lee, who was the president of New Jersey Boxing Commission, said later that in Jersey, there was a rule in the books that said any fight that is stopped before the end of the third round caused by a butt shall be deemed a no contest.
Right. Accident.
So that's exactly what happened. And they made my re-debut on ESPN against another Jimmy Dean or somebody, and that was a first-round knockout that I won by.
Wasn't he the sausage guy?
You know what? I think he was. Maybe I got the wrong
Jimmy
beef,
Dean, man. Maybe it wasn't Jimmy
was
Dean.
I knocked him right into the sausage business.
Yeah, maybe it was Johnny Dean. I don't know. But listen, let's read a couple of emails so we can get some time to open up the phone lines.
Right.
This first one is from... my man Jesse says, hey, Billy C, what's your thoughts on Ajit Kabiel against Herve Hubiak? Is this a legit fight? You know, I'm not too familiar with both fighters, but I will tell you this. It does seem like a legit fight, an even fight, and I'll tell you why. The computer ranks Kabiel at number 50. He's a 24-year-old, 6'3", undefeated heavyweight, 15-0 with 12 knockouts. All his fights have been in Germany, and he goes up against... Huguenot, who's ranked fairly close to him by the computer at number 62, similar in height. He's 6'4". He, too, is 24 years old. He's got more fights under his belt, but he does have a loss. He's 26-1 with 12 knockouts, and most all of his fights have been in Belgium. So I do think it's a legit fight, at least for those two guys. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with it. He says, Igabu Uinah versus Dominic Brazil. Is this a step up for Uinah? And will a win over Dominic get him to a better level fighter? I actually think that this fight is a good fight for both fighters. If you recall, Brazil is coming off the loss. And, you know, I think it's a critical fight for both. So, yeah. He says, as far as Chavez against Canelo, Chavez doesn't throw enough punches, and he doesn't have much in them. I do think, and Sal and I have talked about this, I do think that Chavez is limited with his arsenal. You know, he's primarily a body attack guy. I'm not so sure that I would agree that he doesn't have much behind his punches. I don't know. It depends which Chavez Jr. shows up. He's a hard cat to pick, man. You know, you just don't know what he's going to do. He says, how do you see the David Benavidez against Shiral Manajanov? Is this a quality opponent for David? Manajanov is a tough fighter. And I think he's definitely a legitimate opponent. The problem with Manajanov is that he's inconsistent. So depending upon which one shows up would give us a better feel of, the matchup with David Benavidez. He says, Billy, can you give us a brief history of boxing? Like, who invented it and where did it come from? Boxing's been around. You know, it's funny. When we had a Billy C. Hall of Fame event several years ago, I had a guy that came in and did a presentation on art and boxing. And you could trace the beginnings of boxing, at least combat like that, all the way back to the Roman times. And
the castanets used to fight with the studded gloves with metal and all
exactly.
That stuff.
Exactly. And there was actually some drawings in caves where they would show Egyptians fighting with what it looked like when we saw the display with one hand behind their back, kind of.
Listen.
That's
where
serious.
The term came from.
Well, and the other hand with some kind of a glove on it. So it was almost like fencing with your hands. And these were, these were drawings. Yeah, it was fascinating. But for the record, they put the beginning of boxing, at least what we consider modern day in terms of bare knuckle times, in the 1700s. The father of boxing, his name was Jack Broughton. And Broughton was actually had a school of fencing. And he decided to come up with a different form. And they took the sword off, and it became basically fencing with your hands until he actually killed someone. And he felt that there had to be some rules put in place. So he developed the Broughton rules, the Broughton boxing rules, in 1743. And those rules actually stayed in place all the way up until the early 1800s, mid-1800s, 1838, when the London Prize rules were in place. And now Jack Broughton's rules, the father of boxing, they had three major rules. When a fighter got knocked down, that was the end of a round. So if you stayed on your feet for 6 hours and then got knocked down, there's the end of round one. If you stayed on your feet for 5 seconds, that was the end of round one. So he had basically three rules. The round ended when a fighter hit the ground. There was 30 seconds in between the rounds. You know, you had a 30-second rest period, and you couldn't gouge out each other's eyes. Those were the three rules. And those rules.
Fair.
It's sort of like MMA today, but
say a little more.
Yeah, those
Except
rules
ground.
Are.
The ground.
Those rules were in place all the way until the London Prize rules came in effect. So pretty much the guy who gets credit for being the father of boxing was Jack Broughton. And by the way, he lived to 86 years old in the 1700s, which was pretty
pretty like
amazing.
Grandfather, that's like wow, because I think the average lifespan might have been back then 40 years old.
Yeah, if that, you know, maybe like 50. You were already married with grandkids at 15, you know. But another guy to keep in mind, too, Jesse, is Figg, James Figg.
Yes,
also,
I heard of James Figg.
James Figg was also considered one of the pioneers, even though he came like 40 years after Jack Broughton, James Figg was credited as being the first heavyweight world champion of England. And, you know, the Broughton didn't really have weight classes, you know, so they started dividing him up in weight classes during Figg's era. So, yeah, and great question, because I love talking about the history of boxing. Jesse has another question. He says, as far as the NFL championships, he says, I'm predicting the Falcons over the Packers 30-27 and the Steelers over the New England Patriots 26-22. Listen, and we might as well talk about the championship games right now. I think you're going to be 0-2 this weekend. I'm predicting that the two best quarterbacks in the NFL, nothing against Matt Ryan, because Matt Ryan of the Falcons has been having a great season, but I think at the end of the day, we're going to see the Packers against the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. Just to get you caught up, the NFC Championship game is Sunday at 3 o'clock. It's taking place in Atlanta. The Packers will be visiting the Falcons. A little bit of FYI for you. The Packers finished the regular season 10-6. Their away record, which you have to look at this game as an away record, was 4-4. So that's something to keep in the back of your head. The only thing is that the Packers have rattled off, I think it was 7 or 8 wins in a row, including the playoff win. So they're a hot, hot team. But they are going into this game with several key injuries. So that's FYI. Now, the Falcons, they're 11-5 in regular season, were very hard to beat at home. They were 5-3 at home. You know, Matt Ryan's having MVP quality year. And the offense is just so explosive. I think the difference in this particular game is going to be the defense. I think the Packers' defense will be able to at least control the Falcons' offense a little better than the Falcons' defense can control the Packers' offense. If the Falcons can jump out and put a, you know, 2 or 3 touchdown lead on the Packers in this game, it may end up being close. But if this game stays close, and we're in going into the fourth quarter, and he, you know, even if the Packers are only down by a touchdown or even 10 points, that's not enough with Aaron Rodgers. And one thing you got to learn, and I'm sure the Cowboys learned last week, you can't give the ball back to Aaron Rodgers when he's a touchdown or less behind with any time left on the clock. This guy is truly a come-from-behind guy, so I'm picking the Packers in that one. As far as the AFC Championship game, listen, the Steelers are 11-5. They're playing in New England, facing the 14-4 Patriots. The Patriots are 6-2 at home. Steelers are 5-3. Listen, I'm a Jet fan. I'm donning a Jet sweatshirt right now. So, I hate the New England Patriots. I can't stand them. However, I don't dislike the players on the New England Patriots. I dislike the fact that they kick the shit out of the Jets all the time. I respect Tom Brady. He's one of the best ever playing the position. They're filled with talent on the team. But Bill Belichick this is a great coach. There's no question. He's developed the system, and he picks players that will fall into his system. When I look at the Steelers, no disrespect to the organization, but there's not a player on that team I like. I can't stand Ben Roethlisberger. Anybody that gets away with basically raping somebody in a bathroom, not once but twice, is not a great human being. Yeah. I can't vote for a guy like that. Yeah. I really hope the Patriots, even though I hate the Patriots, I hope the Patriots put a good old-fashioned ass-whooping on the Steelers. It's a very unlikable team for me personally. So I'm picking the Patriots over the Steelers to set up a Packers-Patriots Super Bowl. And if that happens, I will say this. Regardless of who wins the NFC Championship game, I'll be rooting for the NFC this time. So one other thing I wanted to mention about the NFL real quick. Speaking of the Jets, it was announced the other day that Mark Gastineau, one of my favorite players, good old number 99, who used to do the sack dance when he was part of the New York Sack Exchange with the Jets in the 80s, was diagnosed recently with a trifecta of terrible diseases, really? Alzheimer's, dementia, and Parkinson's. And, you know, he was doing an interview on a radio station in New York the other day. And he was just talking. You couldn't even understand him. I mean, it's worse than when me and you try to talk to each other, Sal, you know. But, you know, it was it's sad. And, you know, he's an advocate for, you know, safety techniques in football. He feels that a lot of his problems stemmed from, you know, basically tackling the wrong way, etc. Another thing he didn't mention, which people got to remember, is he did have a professional boxing career in which he was pretty piss poor. So
my thoughts, took a lot of shots, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. My thoughts and prayers go out to Mark Esser.
My thoughts and prayers to him, too. How old is he about? He's 60. About he's 60. In his 50s, no?
No, he's 60. He just turned 60.
He's 60? Yeah. Oh, somebody older than us.
Yeah, I know. That's right. Thank God. Not by much. Hey, you better be quiet before you know it. We're going to be there. But anyway, I got a couple of more emails, and we're going to open up the phone lines here. This one's from my man Chris from Canada. He says, good morning, Billy C. and Sal. He says, has Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. announced who his trainer will be for the upcoming fight? Freddie Roach said he would train him, but if he takes one day off, Freddie quits. In Chris's opinion, he says, if he goes with Robert Garcia, he doesn't think he's going to make the weight. What's our opinion? I said when they announced this fight, I doubt that he's going to make the weight, and I'm curious to see what Canelo does if Chavez does not make the weight. He's had a history of having trouble making weight. That's a good question. I don't know who's training him. Freddie Roach is not all that. I think that between the two, they didn't get along that well. Maybe his pops is training. I didn't hear anything. Have you, Sal?
No, I haven't heard anything, but I will be keeping my ears low to the ground from here on. I'll let you know.
Well, don't keep them too low. People will be stepping on your head. But
you know what? Who would be the first time?
Yeah. So, no, I don't know. But good question, Chris. Maybe somebody will call in and enlighten us on that. But I think Freddie Roach, his days have come and gone. I think it's time for him to hang it up. I don't see – when was the last time he was really effective in a corner? You know,
In all due respect to Freddie Roach, I remember, you know – I was just coming up, and we were trying to fight Freddie Roach. I think he was very active on ESPN with the championships. Then he moved from Boston to Vegas, I believe. Freddie Roach was a good, solid fighter, and I know he's had a great history of training fighters and world champions. A lot of times, you got to ask yourself, though, when it comes to a lot of these trainers, and some of them are world-class, great trainers, and I was lucky enough to have quite a few. But also, when they align themselves with these great fighters, what came first, the chicken or the egg, you know? Is it the chemistry, the team that they hone in and look and see? And so I think Freddie Roach is a good trainer, and I think he had some great, great champions that he honed in and that he developed and helped retain great fights and money. But, I don't know where he is today in his activity with the fighters as far as his level.
Well, he has a hard time communicating.
He does. That's what I'm trying not to say.
Well, I said it.
Exactly.
I said it.
Thank you.
But it's even worse. It even goes to another level.
Debilitating disease, which we all know.
But okay, but it even goes another level. He has a tendency to work the corner of somebody that doesn't even speak English. So not only is he having a hard time.
Understand each other.
You wanted me to say it, but you come back and say that? Okay, all right. We better let that one go right now.
It's all by mind, by hands, by this or that. You can I do that every day of my staff.
That was a good one. Anyway, Joel has a question for us. He says, Billy C and Sal, unfortunately, won't be able to call in today for Fan Driven Friday, but I wanted to wish you and Sal a great weekend. You have a great weekend too, Joel. He says, I was curious though, what are your and Sal's thoughts on tonight's quadruple Showtime card? Do you think it's worth watching? He says, enjoy the football this weekend. I do think it's worth watching. The fight's coming from my man Larry Hazard's domain in Atlantic City, New Jersey. The main event is Adam Lopez going up against Danny Roman. This is some kind of an elimination bout for some kind of title. But these are two good fighters fighting each other. One thing I like about this card, now you could look deeper into it than if you want. You know, the card looks great on paper. Now, if you want to evaluate how these fighters got their records that look so good, that's a whole other story. But on paper, Adam Lopez 16-0 with a draw. going up against Danny Roman, 20 wins, 2 losses and a draw. That's the main event. I think it's a good fight. Then you have Ronald Ellis against Christopher Brooker, 13-0 with a draw for Ellis and 11-2 for Brooker. This is a super middleweight matchup. Kenneth Sims against Emmanuel Robles. Sims in the junior welterweight fight. Sims is 10-0. Robles is a tough fighter at 15 wins, 1 loss, and 1 draw. So I like it. And then rounding out the card, I think to kick it off is Stephen Young against Olamijan Nazarov. Young is 15-0-3, and Nazarov is 14-3. And this is in super bantamweight division. So in a nutshell, I say yes. It's definitely worth while. But hey, listen, we're going to open up the phone lines right now. Give us a call. What's your thoughts on PED use in sports? You think it's people are starting to accept it? Or what's your thought on Badu Jack moving right to light heavyweight, not giving the fans a rematch with the gal? Give us a call right now, 845-228-8710. And Sal, you know, Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman are going to be fighting, and it's going to be broadcast on CBS on regular television.
Wow.
Which is
that's a treat.
Pretty good. And I look at this fight and I start thinking about, you know, pay-per-views and stuff like that. Do you think pay-per-views, you think boxing, or at least the powers that be, or at least we got to give credit here to Al Haymon and the PBC, because the PBC is the one that's doing this fight March 4th from Brooklyn on regular television, CBS. Do you think that this might be something that will continue, where we get big fights on regular TV? I mean, let's be real. You're not going to get better viewership on a pay-per-view versus a network. And, you know, if a potential advertiser or sponsor knows that they're going to be on primetime on a network like CBS, wouldn't they be more inclined to open up the checkbooks? What's your thoughts?
I think you're right. And you know what? This was when boxing was the game, was the sport, and it was Saturday or Friday or Thursday. You used to have Thursday night ESPN fights from the casinos or anywhere. You'd have Saturday, you'd have CBS Sports with Gil Clancy. You'd have Howard Cosell on ABC, Wide World of Sports. This was every Saturday, and you were treated to a world-class world championship bout or elimination or something that was good contendership, whatever it was. And these fights, this caliber fight, coming to a national audience, worldwide audience on national TV, I think could be a real catalyst to getting some fans back. And where they're not paying for it, they're turning on their channel. And wow, what a great welcoming this could be. And maybe it's start. You know, I give Al Haymon some credit. I know you and I have our thoughts and our words about it, but you know what? He did try. If he could sell it, if they could evolve, this is what it should be. And leave the bigger fights in pay-per-view. But I think any top fight like this should be televised. And let's see what the audience numbers are.
Yeah, well, this is a big fight. And it could
it's
have
a
been
a big fight.
It could
it's
have
a very
been,
big fight.
Yeah, it could have been a pay-per-view. But I'm glad.
It could
that,
have been.
Yeah, I'm glad that it's on CBS. So we'll see what happens.
I mean, look at the yesterday years. I mean, the first one that went to, these were all televised fights. Every world title fight we saw, until we heard the term for the first time, closed circuit TV. Then you would see Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, something else, a mega fight, and that was the evolution of where fights went away from the television.
Well, you know, when you get a mega, that I agree. Like, you know, once a year you get the mega fight that's a pay-per-view, and then we got off course in boxing, and everything started becoming pay-per-view.
We did, because everyone wanted to jump on one bandwagon or see this, and everybody warranted a fight, why it should be this and that, and maybe they did at the time. Maybe it did fill a gap, and maybe it was where they were going to maximize money, exposure, and things like that. But like I said, I think for boxing to be big, make America great again. Well, boxing would be great again. I think certain things have to fall into play. And nationally televised boxing matches is a great catalyst to get on that right track.
You know, the funny thing is technology's changed. Phone lines are open, 845-228-8710. Technology's changed. You know, everybody has access to anything now. So maybe network television isn't, you know, as big of a thing as it once was. I mean, I'm sure more people can access CBS than they can Showtime or HBO or even a pay-per-view, but the pay-per-view they're going to have to pay for. But the promoters leaned towards pay-per-view because it was easier for them. They were able to make more profit because the people watching it were basically paying for it. On network television, either CBS wrote a check to have it and hopes that they can sell sponsorships for it, that's really the only other option, you know. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Another thing I wanted to mention real quick is Gervonta Davis. You know, he's really, really trying to be the next big pay-per-view star. I think they're jumping the gun a little bit with this guy. I really do. I think he won one big fight in his career against Pedraza last weekend. But I think we got the man, the myth, the legend on the line right now, Sal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Max. Is this Max?
This is Max, not the man. I'm not the myth or the legend.
Right? Oh, that's not what I read in the USA Today, man. What's up?
How you doing, gentlemen?
How you doing today?
Doing good, man. You know, it's a shame that, you know, you were talking about earlier PEDs and boxing, Baseball Hall of Fame and all that now. And it's like, you know, these guys do steroids or performance-enhancing drugs, they're getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. But our friend, you know, Pete Rose, can't get inducted because of a few small bets that he did.
That's a hell of a point, Max. Wow.
Well, I'm one that believes that Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. 100%. You know, the thing about Pete Rose, and you know, I've had this discussion with people many, many times. You know, one of the big rules in baseball, and it goes all the way back to the early 1900s with the famous Black Sox scandal. You can't gamble on baseball. When you get into the professional level, whether it be, you know, Class A or whatever they call it, Single A, Double A, etc. You know, those level baseball, they tell you beginning then, you can't gamble. You know, in every locker room in professional baseball, it says do not gamble on baseball. You know, and I get it. That's the argument against Pete Rose. You know, my argument for Pete Rose has always been, well, it's not like he gambled on his team to lose, especially when he was a manager. It's not like he said, well, I'm putting money on us today to lose, and then he puts the worst pitcher in, puts the worst lineup in, and, you know, he was always betting on himself to win. You know, so if you have to put an asterisk next to it, and you know, it's a tough one, because if you make an exception for him, then you might have to make an exception for another player. But the only thing about Pete Rose is that the stats are so... Nobody's ever going to beat Pete Rose's stats, you know? And when you look at these guys, like I was coming up with the statistics earlier that were published in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, you know, the approval rating for, you know, the two big names in Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are going up since they've been eligible for the Hall of Fame. The approval rating's going up. And based on the increase from last year to this year, it's going to be another 2 years, and then they'll have their 75%. You know, so that was my point, Max. Are people starting to soften up with PED use?
You know, it certainly is. It's like it's saying, hey, it's okay to go out and do this, do that.
Well, the benchmark again is lowered.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's getting to that point right there.
Yeah, well,
you know, it's not about playing the game as, you know, the best you can, but you gotta go out and take a supplement that'll make you improve your game so much better.
But playing devil's advocate, you could, you know, say, okay, well, throughout the history of professional sports, or even better yet, throughout the history of competitive sports, every athlete has tried to gain an edge of some kind. You know, in the sport of boxing, the guys that found ways of chopping wood better or running or, you know, back in the day, James Jeffries used to go hunting, mountain climbing, and to get himself mentally and physically prepared for fights. You know, he felt that that was an edge, whether it was or not. You know, who knows? It certainly helped him. You know, as time went on, maybe players used better equipment. You know, found different nutritional advantages. You know, so they're always trying to find an advantage. And in today's world of technology, you know, a supplement or a performance-enhancing drug to them, in their mind, is an edge. You know, should we say, go ahead, knock yourselves out? You know, I mean, that's where I think it's going.
Yeah, I honestly think it should just say, no, let's don't do that. Let's get back to the old ways of playing the sport and doing the sport. You know, back when it was just pure hard training, you know, it was getting up a little extra earlier in the morning to do, you know, the physical standards that you need to do to make yourself a little bit better. Not, you know, take this or do some computer enhancing or injecting this into your body, you know.
No, don't get me wrong. I agree with you. But the problem is it's virtually become impossible to police. You know, when that and like Sal and I were talking about earlier, you know, you come up, they define what a performance enhancing drug is, it has a name, and then they put it on, you're not allowed to use this list, right? You know, and then they just mix up another one that's not on the list. And it's not illegal, you know? So I mean it's a losing battle. It's like trying to stop the leaking dike with your finger, you know? I mean, you know, it's just, and I don't mean a leaking dike that's a female.
I know you mean. Hey.
I'm talking about a dam.
You said it. My head went there, and I said, nah, he's not going to go there. You went there.
Anyway. You know,
that's a humorous.
Yeah, it was what Max was thinking. That's it was his fault. But but anyway, you know, I'm just saying. You know, it just seems like it's a losing battle, and these guys are always going to try and get the edge, and it's a shame. You know.
It's definitely a shame.
Hey, maybe they'll make there's one PED that's legal. Maybe they'll make that illegal. I don't know. That's Viagra. That's a performance-enhancing drug.
Yeah, it is. But if they start giving that out to baseball or football players, they'll have a couple extra bats in their hands. But anyway.
You know what? I won't get off topic, but we can go in there one other day. I'll tell you some story.
Well, the argument, isn't that what Sal does, Max? You know, somebody comes in, hey, I ordered my pizza, and Sal says, yeah, here's the pizza, and here's the pepperoni, you know? But anyway.
I don't know where you're going with this one, Bill.
Max, football this weekend, NFC, AFC championship games. What's your thoughts? Who's going to win in the NFC matchup, Packers or the Atlanta Falcons that are close to you guys?
I'm staying with my home team, the Atlanta Falcons.
Wait a minute. Last week when you came on, or whenever the last time, you're talking about your team being the Giants. Man, did you jump ship now?
Oh, no. All right, hey, whoa.
He loves the Giants. He loves the Yankees. But come on, he's a Georgia born and raised guy.
First of all, he was born in New York, in upstate New York, right, Max?
No, I was born in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, I thought you lived in upstate New York.
He did.
No, I used to go to New York to go see my grandfather on summers and springs. Spend time up there with him.
Oh, I see. All right. Well,
that's where I fell in love with the pinstripes.
But yeah, listen,
and his grandfather used to take him to Yankee Stadium and see the Yankees. So, I mean, what a great impression and segue to a young boy to see the greatest team in baseball history perform.
Sal, don't make me break out the recording of the last time Max was here. He admitted on this show, in front of all the viewers and listeners, that he became a Giant and Yankee fan just so you wouldn't play that damn CD day in and day out. The poor guy has been brainwashed.
Oh, you know what? We have a good doctor. He's going to be my future eye doctor when I break down and go to an eye doctor, because he helps Dr. Comer. And
Dr. Comer.
So funny. He sits at the bar with his family, with his wife every week. And he'll see me squinting, looking at if I get a text from Kayla or something. I'm squinting on the phone. I'm like, what is this? He says, Sal, I can fix that. Sal, I can help you. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm still on my onesies with the reading glasses. But but he's funny, and I don't know where I was going with this one. But
we know, Max, you're going with the Falcons. What about in the AFC?
AFC is I'm not really a big Patriots fan. I do like Tom Brady and Belichick a lot. I would love to see Pittsburgh step up and take it, but I got a strong feeling that New England is going to win this game.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you,
Max.
Yeah. So hey, Max, man, I'm looking forward to coming down. We're going to do a golf tournament in Georgia. You going to be part of this or what?
Yeah, I'll come out and drive the golf cart and drink some beer with you guys.
Wait,
I'm not swinging the golf ball too much.
Time out. That was my job. I already admitted that. You know, I'm not that great. They were making fun of me in the chat room that I was going to say 400. You know, but we're definitely going to do that, man. We'll be in St. Simon's. Hopefully. In August, playing.
We're going to try and orchestrate that, Max. We're going to bring them down, stay either at the Sea Palms or the King and Prince, and we're going to get maybe the second week in August for a good week, and we'll do some live shows from the pizzeria and around in the morning, and we'll have a great time. We'll have some people, fans coming down here with us, and maybe we'll bring some celebrities. I'll see if I get Bobby Chez or Vinny Pazienza down here. I'll give them a call.
That'd be cool to have them both down here.
I tell you, guy, maybe we shouldn't have come down.
We're not going to say that.
What, Michael Mora?
No, Michael Mora. The last time Michael Mora was in my restaurant, I love Michael Mora. I love him.
Yeah,
but
he's a great guy.
He almost got in a fist fight with one of our dear customers, and one of our dear customers who's a very popular guy didn't back down from him either, but we're not going to go there. So
put it this way, Michael Mora was all I'm saying is he had a couple of beers.
He came to the pizzeria, and Ray's bigger than life. Ray and I have a couple things in common. We're both in the military and in the army, and Ray kept he had his belt with him. I felt bad because the damn jewels kept falling out of the belts, and we had to glue them back in.
Okay, that was
funny. Like every time he'd raise the belt up over his head, another jewel would fall out, and we'd have to pick that up.
Yeah, well, that's
he actually put a piece of chewing gum between a stone and leather.
All I could say about those guys is, when you do to events, maybe just stay away from the brewskis, you know. But
I'll tell you, we had a blast. These guys were fun. Maybe I'll reach out to Ray Mercer and Michael Mora. We'll get them down here too.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'll add some entertainment to it. But anyway, hey Max, thanks for calling in, brother. Well, good luck with the games, and we'll be talking to you maybe next week.
All right, buddy. We'll see y'all next week.
All right,
Max. I'll see you in a little while, buddy, friend.
Yeah, I'll see you in a little while, buddy. See
you. Ciao. Good job.
Bye.
He's going for Atlanta. I guess he can't go against the Falcons, huh? I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing the Falcons in there, but anyway. Oh. Before my man Max called, we were talking about Gervonta Davis, really taking a next step and claims that, you know, he wants to be the next big pay-per-view star following in his mentor Floyd Mayweather's footsteps. I really think that Gervonta Davis has a great opportunity to accomplish that, Sal. Except I think that he's not ready for it now. I mean, this is a guy that if he tries to do it too quickly, I think he's going to follow more in the footsteps of Adrian Broner versus, you know, keeping his head on straight and like you always say, you know, keep your eye on the prize, you know. And I really think that he should use his win of the title against Jose Pedraza as a starting point. And what I mean by that is I think he should, you know, methodically build up his reputation as a good fighter inside the ring, try and stay clean outside the ring 100%, don't get in any trouble, keep his nose clean, so to speak. And, things will fall in place. If he immediately starts talking like he is, I'm the next giant star, I'm this, I'm that, you start believing your own press clippings, you end up like Adrian Broner, who's, you know, I think Adrian Broner's fight coming up, I think it's a joke. I think Adrian Broner has become a joke. I don't want to see Davis following those footsteps. What do you think?
No, I think you're right. You know, boxing, when you're a world-class fighter and you're in the media, you're in the news, you got a belt, you have whatever it takes, you're somewhat of an ambassador to the sport. And you got to live inside the ring and outside the ring like a champion. And you try. I know you can't be Lily White and this and that and try to never have a blemish on your career or what you stand for as a human being. But, you know, you try to do the right things and you try to be humble. Yes, you try to market yourself and you try to do whatever you can to sell the dollars in the future. But I think letting other people work with you or talk with and for you and doing the seeds that you can to plant to get your name out there in a positive way is good. And being a little bragging or so where you can, but not to the extent where you're turning off people and everything else. You got to have balance and you got to conduct yourself as a champion inside and outside the ring. You got to be a role model. Like yeah. I said, you're an ambassador to the sport.
And you know, I hate when these athletes say, I didn't sign up to be a role model. I ain't no role model.
I know.
And that's bullshit because the truth of the matter is you are a role model.
You
and,
want
and
a young fan in your corner or you want to be a bully? I mean, you know.
No, but the point is if you're, you know, catapulted in today's world, if you're catapulted into a high-profile sports athlete position, regardless of what you're doing, whether you're boxing, whether you're playing a team sport, whatever, that comes with the territory. You can't say because I think they that's part of the pay. That's part of why you're getting paid what you get paid. You know, that's part of the job description. I don't know.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway, a guy that I really liked, I guess people are 50-50 on Captain Huck, Marco Captain Huck, a former, cruiserweight champion, pretty much the cruiserweight champion. He lost his title. He's scheduled to fight for an interim title. Now, you know, everybody's critical of the WBA, with their interim titles and all their belts, super belts and all this shit. But the WBC has more interim titles than anybody. And on April 1st, which coincidentally is April Fool's Day.
No way. Come on.
Yeah, Marco Seriously? Huck, who the WBC has ranked number 2, is going up against Marius Bredas, who's the WBC has as number 1 for the WBC's interim World Cruiserweight title. So we'll see what happens with that. The champion of the WBC happens to be Tony Bellew, who's fighting March 4th against the biggest fraud in boxing, in my opinion, aside from Deontay Wilder, is David Haye. And David Haye is fighting Tony Bellew. So, I wonder why they didn't make Bellew give up his belt to fight David Haye. I mean, usually the WBC does that, but what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. I think, it's David Haye, you know, we've seen him, and I don't know, WBC and these rulings, it's the same old, you know?
Yeah, the sanctioning bodies have really...
Sanctioning bodies have just, you know, thrown their weight and their influence and their dollars, you know, maybe not in the greatest direction, but...
No, you're wrong. They never throw dollars at anybody.
They
receive dollars.
Well, that's what I meant. Their future marketing, their future income, that's what they leverage for. And, it's a capitalistic game, too.
You know, next week we're going to be talking about some big things, including the rematch that is highly anticipated, and I can't wait for it. And we'll obviously be doing a post-fight show after.
We're having a real rematch?
Yeah, Leo Santa Cruz against Carl Frampton. Many people thought that was the fight of the year last year. They are having a rematch the way, good fighters and great fights justify. I just don't understand why we don't have as many rematches today. But we are getting a rematch between Leo Santa Cruz and Carl Frampton next weekend. So we'll be talking about that all next week, breaking down the fights and having some fun with that. And then right after the fight, we'll be doing a Billy C, Carl Frampton, Leo Santa Cruz post-fight show. So make sure you guys mark that one down on your calendars. But speaking of calendars, Sal, how about this day in boxing history? Today's January 20th, and in 2007, Ricky Hatton wins a 12-round decision over Juan Yarango to retain the World Junior Welterweight title and win the IBF's World Junior Welterweight titles in Las Vegas. On this day in 2006, Vladimir Piera wins a 12-round decision over Fakhrokhab Rakhkichakchukichim.
Whoa, hey,
yeah, that's pretty much how it's spelled, to win the vacant IBF World Featherweight title at Foxwoods in Connecticut. I was ringside for that one. In 1973, Romeo Nala knocks out Enrique Pinder in the third round to win the World Bantamweight title. It took place in Panama City. On this day in 1990, Sung Kil Moon wins a 9-round technical decision over Nana Kondadu to win the WBC World Junior Bantamweight title. It took place in Korea. On this day in 1973, Roberto Duran knocks out Jimmy Robertson in the fifth round to retain his world lightweight title, and that took place in Panama City in Panama on this day in 1973. And finally, on this day, January 20th in 1980, the late, great Alexis Arguello knocks out Ruben Castillo in the 11th round to retain his WBC World Super Featherweight title, and that took place in Tucson, Arizona, on this day in 1980. Any final thoughts, Sal?
No, I think it was, we had a little fun with this show. I thought we'd have a few more callers calling in. But I enjoyed the show, and I think that the emails, keep those coming, because we love to answer those emails.
Yeah, well, hey, listen, you know, we open up the phone lines. We give people a chance to give us a call, and whether they do or whether they don't, we still have a time frame to fit in. So
we do.
As I got somebody trying to call in right now, unfortunately, you're too late. But
it's me. It's me.
Anyway,
I called up to you.
I'll leave everybody with. No, I know it's not you. I'll leave everybody with this. Enjoy the fights tonight. I do think they're worth watching. Like we had an emailer earlier on Showtime. Check out the quadruple Showtime event tonight. And we'll be chatting about that on Monday. And I hope everybody enjoys the weekend. Enjoy the NFC and AFC championships games. And all I can say is this. Make sure you tune in Monday morning. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, ciao, baby. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da